So the Vajram Bell, in short, is to remind you that you want to achieve bodhicitta and shunyata. And you're doing this practice out of compassion for all sentient beings and by the power of emptiness, non-projection, you will destroy obstacles and problems. And at the same time, you use this to invoke the power of the compassion of the Buddhas. And you make offerings to them as certain liturgies. Om aya om aya tara sabari wara agum padi tube dube aloke gende nevende shavda padida honso. The bell rings first, the damaru after. The bell first starts and finishes last. So you do the bell first, then the damaru, then the bell. The bell always starts first and finishes last. The damaru always finishes first, starts late and finishes first. And when you ring the damaru, it should be done in a way that your wrists never move. I'm sorry, your hands don't move, your arms don't move. You don't. I mean, it looks ridiculous. I mean, it's an offering, so you don't want to sit in front of Buddha, you know. What's that? So you try to make it as graceful and beautiful as possible. At the same time, as humble as possible, not to show off your great tantric practitioner, or tantrika. So you don't sit there, you know, you're in KH doing your talk. You're like, oh, what kind of Buddha is that? What kind of practice is that? Ridiculous. So as humble as possible. So when you ring it, whoops. Everything dissolves into emptiness. So when you ring it, you keep it at this level. And you only move your thumb. Take some practice. Very gentle, very quiet, and very simple. It should be at this level, Sarim, she said. Your hip level. Not this, not this, not like that. It should be at hip level, very gentle. This represents bliss and voidness, the immutable qualities of any tantric deity. And it represents a realization of emptiness. Why? The sound comes from nowhere, goes nowhere. And this is a beautiful ornament to offer enlightenment, enlightened energy, enlightened mind. So this whole thing is a beautiful offering instrument to the three jewels. So you have it in conjunction. Most of us here do not need this. We should get a Vajram Bell and keep it clean, keep it well, and keep it nicely on our altars. And you don't go, you know, if you have a maid in the house, you go, no. No. You get another bell. You know, people like Paris should be like, how convenient, how cool is a Tibetan maid caller? Very, very naughty. No, we don't do things like that. So what happens is that bell represents wisdom. And the Vajra represents compassion. So bodhicitta, shunyata. Method, wisdom. Okay? And then, invoking the Buddhas, taking off. It's very powerful to have. It's very nice to have. You get one that suits your size, you know, your hand. You know, you're like one, you don't want to have the big bend. Too heavy. You don't want to have that. If you're Jivan, you want to have a teeny little. You know, it looks ridiculous. Something that fits you. And get it clean and washed and consecrated by your love. And then when you're not using the bell, very important to cover it. Why? We don't show tantric practice in any way, shape, or form. Humility, keeping the commitments, and not losing attainments. So when we're not using the items, we always keep a cover, and we try to use it as less as possible, especially if there's people around. Why? Not to reveal tantric practice till we're attained. So this is very, very important to have. The Vajra and Bell, right? This is a rice thrower. At end of certain praises, example, if you do the Lama Tripa, and this we should do, the Tok group, the Tantra group should do, anybody can do. This is how you bless things. Example, in the Lama Tripa at the end, which we do 2 weeks once in the center, we have the Tashi, or the Verses of Auspiciousness. Verses of Auspiciousness of page 44, or stanza 118. It says here, through the excellence of whatever white virtues there are in samsara and nirvana, may all be auspicious for us to be freed here and now from all misfortune and hardship, and thus enjoy a glorious and perfect celestial treasure of temporal, ultimate virtue and goodness. You offer this to the three jewels. Why? Rice is scarce before. To be able to offer it is a sign of detachment. not being attached. And offering rice, in the East means growth, abundance, and life. So when you offer rice to the three jewels, it's a final auspicious. It's like, you know, like at weddings they throw rice. I don't know why, but in Tibetan tradition, when they throw it, it is asking for auspiciousness, for the benediction. And you can bless, you yourself can bless tankas like this. If you have a tantric initiation, you think of yourself as tantric deity, you can bless the tankas like that. Well, how do you bless it? That when the rice is thrown at tanka, what you have recited, may it come true for the beholder of this tanka. So anybody who sees this tanka or image, may whatever I've recited come true. I invoke you, Lord Buddha, with humility. So you use this. So tantric group can use this. In Tara, we can use this. We should learn. Then it says here, may all be auspicious for the Buddha's teachings endure long through your centers of Dharma, omniscient Losang Chakwa, Tsongkhapa, being filled with hosts of monks, yogis, striving single-pointedly to master the three pure trainings. You ring the bell liturgy to literally invoke the blessings of the three jewels. So this is a rice thrower. It doesn't have to be silver. It doesn't be however you like, but it's considered an offering item. So you can keep it like this. And then certain lamas that have very powerful blessed rice, they keep on top what they use for dispelling interferences or possessions. So very accomplished lamas, they have blessed rice here. And you can be accomplished, you don't have to be a lama. So if there's disturbances or whatever with the person, they'll run. Because the rice will hit them like lava balls. Very powerful, very, very powerful. So this has many shapes. This is the inner offering. I'm not getting too much into this because we're not qualified to learn yet. This inner offering cup is only opened and used during certain liturgies. And certain mantras must be recited so they don't lose their essence. If you make offerings without reciting the mantra correctly, if you do offerings, a type of spirit that helps to make you fall asleep during Dharma talks will appear to you. So if you're frivolous and careless with your offerings, and you always leave it empty, or you always don't purify, always don't clean, and you do this offering sloppy, or you leave the offerings on your altar for days, or it's not neat, a type of spirit will be attracted that when this spirit infects you, you'll always be sleepy during Dharma talks. You can't focus, you can't keep awake. You're always like, very, very, always like that. Always like that, all right? So this is an inner offering which is used to offer the wisdom of emptiness and bliss in the form of a liquid, purified. So I won't go too much into that. Inner offering, most of you do not need this except if you're in higher tantras, all right? So for us who want to do Tara practice, this and this and this would be enough. It doesn't have to be exactly this shape. Doesn't have to be silver or anything. The precious items and the offering is an offering to the three jewels. And when you're not, and also you don't need a damaru, but you can get a damaru, and you can put it, can I have the last offering bowl? Instead of using that one, I like to offer the damaru sometimes instead of conch shell. Like to the dharma protectors, I like to offer something a little more fierce. So without this, I offer like that. It's very, very nice. So something unique and different. Why? Well, I can't use damaru. I'm not qualified. I'm not at level. Never mind. I'll let the Buddhas use nini. So you keep a nice damaru, beautiful, auspicious. In the future, you can gain the qualities of what it represents and achieve tantric realizations. You can offer that to the three jewels. Why not? Many, many things you can do from your heart, sincerely. And conch shell is very nice. Very, very, very auspicious. Now, so ritual instruments are, in short, used as aids in your meditation, used as aids in your visualization. They remind you of what you're supposed to visualize and think and generate in your mind. They also help you to complete what you're supposed to do. So ritual instruments, again, is aids in your Dharma offerings and Dharma practice, reminders of the mind generation, and also helps you to complete your practice. Okay? So that's what ritual instruments, in short, is all about with that little explanation that I gave. And last but not least, without having a long, long explanation, which is not necessary, you guys already know pretty much, is offering precious and semi-precious stones. Very, very wonderful. We all like to offer it on a ring for ourselves. You know, we like to wear it on a necklace. We like to wear it here and there. But you know what? Jewelry is wonderful, but it's equivalent to adorning a corpse. Just a nice corpse walking around wearing nice jewelry, and you know, it's fabulous. Of course, if you have an ulterior motive, that's good. Example, if you need to, you know, go to a big party and meet big people, and you need to look really trashy and rich and good, and then, you know, you need to look like that to get donations to help you build a retreat center, deck yourself out. Wear it. I mean, with the motivation. It depends. Again, jewelry itself and wearing ornaments is not intrinsically evil. No, it's not intrinsically good. It's your motivation. It's your motivation. So precious items, we say it's more precious. From their side, whether it's a piece of rock, it's a crystal or diamond, it's exactly the same thing. But from our side, we put value on it. Since we put value on it, we put a price tag on it. Since we put a price tag on it, price tag represents some kind of sacrifice to get that type of item. So precious items are very nice to offer to the three jewels as ornaments. Oh, very nice practice. On their bodies, on their heads, on Dharma texts, on the cloths, on the ritual items, on mandala. If we have mandala full of pearls and all that, fabulous. Why? We don't have to visualize that they're precious items. They are. So you know what happens during the offering? You can just relax. You don't have to visualize. Some of us hate to use our brains, so we can take a break. Why? We say, look, it's Tsongkhapa. It is pearls. I don't need to visualize. I take a break. You do your ritual without visualizing. Isn't that fabulous? So it's a shortcut. Now, if you want to be a cheapskate and you don't want to offer pearls because, you know, you need to survive and you need to keep your $20 million in the bank and you need to make sure that your children, 25 generations now have money after you die and you don't want to offer any pearls and mandala, never mind, you visualize. But I don't think it'll be too effective because then it's not sincere. If you don't have the funds, you visualize. If you have the funds, don't visualize, do it. And visualize on top that it's even greater than what you've offered. So offering any type of precious items, it doesn't matter what you think is precious. It doesn't matter what people think is precious, what you feel. If your favorite is diamonds, diamonds are Rinpoche's best friend. If you feel, you know, I don't like diamonds, too shiny, they look cheap, and they might think it's a crystal, and you like to offer pearls, well, pearls are Tsongkhapa's best friend. So what you are attached to and what you like, you offer to the Buddhas. Because pearls and jewels and precious stones are representative of wealth. Having them is representative of us having wealth, which means if we have that, we are going to be happy. Money buys happiness. That's what we're taught. That's what we're taught to believe. So I chant that mantra, everything. I've been doing it for a million times. It's still, I can't get the realization. Money brings happiness, money brings happiness, money brings happiness. I can't get the realization. I don't know why. Somebody's been passing this lineage wrong. Because that's what they told me in America, you know. That's what everybody in America tells you. If you have money, you're rich. I go to Hollywood, you know, all these stars, you know, I have this, you know, lifestyles of the rich and famous, celebrity hideouts, you know, celebrity haunts. And I look at all that and they all tell you, you know, I got money and I'm happy. They all say that. They go on interviews on Oprah, you know, I'm rich and I'm happy. So I believe them. I mean, they're gurus. So I've been chanting that mantra. If I have money, if I'm rich, I'll be happy. It doesn't work. I don't know, not yet. Maybe I need to do a little more. Maybe if it's still not working, I'll learn from all of you. I'm sure you're experts. So see, I have a lineage to pass to you. You have a lineage to pass to me. Isn't that fabulous? I think I'll get my first money initiation from Mr. Ngao. Then I'll go to Paris, because that's his consort, you know. Visualize! Mrs. Ngao, the accountant, don't throw things at me. Visualize consort, not real. No. And his visualization is so good, so it's kind of mixed up. Is it Yong or is it Paris? Ooh, it's Yong. So what happens is offering precious items equates to wealth. When you offer these things up instead of adorning your own corpse, you collect every single meaning behind that jewel that you're offering. And it's a very, very powerful way to attract wealth. What kind of wealth? Two ways. One is material wealth. You will get material wealth. Oh, you will. And spiritual wealth, if that's what you're after. So if you offer pearls or diamonds, whatever, pearls, you know, semi-precious crystals to the Buddhas, and your intention is that your business will get better, it will. But that's all you'll get. If you offer it up with the intention to become a Buddha, your business will become good, your attainments will grow, and you'll be a Buddha. So those objects are representative of your prayers and a direct manifestation of your cutting off attachment. Miserliness. So when you offer precious items, it is a direct message to yourself inside and the Buddhas that you're cutting off attachment and you're getting rid of miserliness and you're accomplishing the six paramita. One of the six paramitas, I'm sorry, giving. If you make excuses that you don't offer this, you don't offer that because you're doing this, you're doing that. If you have limits to your offering, oh, if I offer this, I don't need to offer that. It also shows your limited knowledge in Dharma. Oh, if I'm doing this, I don't need to do that. Simple, silly, very silly. So when we make offerings of precious items, it's supreme. That's why when you go to the most sacred Buddha statue in Tibet, Jorimchi, in the central cathedral, Jekang, you see the Buddha image completely encrusted in pure gold and jewels, diamonds and pearls and corals, the whole body. I'm sure many of you have seen that picture. If you haven't, you can see it in Kichara Paradise. It's called Jorumchi. It's the most sacred Buddha statue in Tibet. Some of you have flown there and saw him. And he's very powerful, very blessed. So what happens is those jewelry and those beautiful ornaments were offered up by Lama Tsongkhapa to that Buddha. During Lama Tsongkhapa 600 years ago, he offered that, he had that made, craftsmen offered to the Buddha. That's a sign of Lama Tsongkhapa's generosity also. So when we make offerings to the Buddha images, we are collecting direct merit for gaining prosperity and wealth. Oh, definitely. And when is enough? It's never enough. Never, never, never enough. And once you offer, don't take it back. You know, you offer Buddha a necklace, say, oh, I gotta borrow that. Sorry, I got a pati. Once offered, given away, say thank you. No borrow thing. And don't say to your guru, well, when I offered the Tara and I borrowed it, she didn't say anything, what? Don't be cute. Once offered, because a long time ago, it was a little bit sad because there was this lady who offered things to Kensarimji, put in the statues. Later, she asked for her back because she wasn't doing well. So I was a little shocked. I've never heard of that. Once offered, it's gone. And don't be attached. Don't be attached. Believe in the law of cause and effect. So precious items and precious jewels are beautiful. They're a sign of your cutting away of miserliness and attachment. And it's a direct method for gaining great amount of wealth. Inner wealth represented by jewels. Outer wealth represented by housing, clothes, food, all the things that you need to live well. All the things that you need to live well. And when you make these kind of offerings, you will be assured of that in your future lives. Assured of it. This life, you'll see things recover and become better. Future lives, definitely. 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 No doubt about that. All right? Any questions of what we talked about? Oh my, it's only 2:00 and we finished. Oh, never mind. You've been sleeping for 2 months. You didn't see me 2 months while you're calling in. Is Rinpoche dead? What happened to the teachings? Yeah, I know. No, was it you or him? Somebody told me you two were harassing one of my people. When? And I was thinking, just wait. A little sleepy, a little fun. Just think of this as a Saturday night party. You know, we're in some fabulous club, and it's owned by Joanne Dan. We're in JB. She had a pub, you know. The bartender was Fat Monk. I'm not kidding you. Yep, Fat Monk was the bartender. JT was the pub owner, and here she is. She's a Dakini, and he's a Mahasiddha, transformed. One day, they were walking onto to the pub, and they met Tsenrimchi, and things changed. But I want to open a pub to help all sentient beings. I can generate income, help the Dharma. That's what she told me. Help me, get me a license. Help me. Okay, I'll help you. And then Fat Monk, you know, in order to purify my negative karma, he left me alone to do things myself and went away for a whole year in JB to let me purify my negative karma. Thank you very much. And he was a bartender in the pub. Isn't that fabulous? He was up the whole night meditating and giving offerings to the sentient beings. And behind the cash register was Dakini JD. Isn't that fabulous? Yeah, they had that pub. And I don't know what happened. I don't care. Anyways, my karma became purified. And I had dreams of washing Fat Monk's body and, you know, making incense offerings to Fat Monk. I was like, Namo Amitabha, Fat Monk. And then JT, you know, somehow something, the light went on. Selling alcohol is not very virtuous work. It was very deep, hidden, tantric secrets. So it took her a while to realize because it's very deep. But she meditated every day. Why is giving alcohol to everybody and making money off that bad? And of course, after she came home from the pub, she read the Lam Rim every day. She did. So one day the light came on, and the pub and the pubette both came back to Kuala Lumpur and had the great fortune again that I ran across them. And now JT is not in the pub behind a cash register. She's in a Dharma store behind a cash register. A cash register, same what? And then the pubette, the other one, her sidekick, her pet, is now offering drinks not to people but to the Buddhas every day. Does about 60, 70 water bowl offerings at my house and candles every day. He's still a bartender. So all the Buddhas come and get it at the watering hole and has a drink. Oh, every day I have a huge offering area. I'll show you guys, some of you guys one day. Most of you have seen it. So he has to do the offerings every day. He's still serving drinks, you know, but it's the Buddhas now. Isn't that fabulous? Yeah, how that all matches, huh? Well, cash register, pub, and now Dharma store, offering drinks to, you know, sentient beings and now to the Buddhas. It's incredible how things just transform when they meet Semramji. I generated a lot of merit in previous lives to meet them. I prayed. I did prostrations upon prostrations. I made offerings, and then in this life I was fortunate to meet Buddha JT and her entourage, Buddha, a fed monk. And so isn't that fabulous? Oh, you think I'm kidding? Ask them. And she even came to me for divination.
I want to get a license for my pub. How?
You can imagine she wants me to do pujas and prayers and give her a method to get a license to open a pub. I said, okay. I did divination. I said, all right. So maybe this is the way to bring her to the Dharma. Okay, la. She got her license. She opened up her pub. Realization dawned. So sometimes we have to use desire to cut desire. Oh, many, many, many ways. Isn't that fabulous? Many ways. You never know. A few years down the line, you might be shocked to enlightenment. You know, you're so shocked you become a Buddha. Incredible. You just become totally shocked. Paris is in maroon robes, meditating in Ganden, doing a retreat. And we have finally convinced us to stop doing this to attractive monks. So after that period of purification, you know, every time an attractive monk walks by, she's like, Om Mani Padme Hum. She stopped doing that, so she's in retreat now. She's in maroon robes with vows this time. Last time it was just a trick to get monks. So now she's with vows, she's in the monastery, and she's like, isn't that fabulous? Oh, yes. Can you imagine a few years later, Paris in robes? Yeah, well, you can take robes for 2-3 weeks and dedicate it to your parents. Why not? No problem. Don't make those faces. We will definitely get fat monk to shave your hair. It'll be his pleasure. And then you know what? We'll take your hair, stick it in a stupa, and give it to JP here. Put it on your throne, on your altar of worship. Then, of course, JP on the way home drops it in the garbage can by accident. Not the stupa, just the hair. Oh, I lost it. Too bad. Isn't that fabulous? So miracles do happen. And guess what? Maybe after a few more sessions of Dharma and realizations, Mrs. Ngā will smile. And we'll discover she has teeth, because she's just like, and sometimes I say something, once every hour I say something interesting, I see her going. And then if I crack a joke, JP's sitting there controlling his belly like, she's in the corner. That's right. And then after a few more sessions, Paul will receive the city of staying awake. It's incredible. Paul will be throughout the whole Dharma session. And you know what we found out? We found out he taped his eyes up, caught. That's right. But right now he's like, you see his face. He's got all kinds of expressions. Wonderful. How he keeps it open. Sometimes he uses his, you know, his eyebrows. Like, or sometimes he's like, wonderful. All kinds of wonderful. And it's okay. No problem. No problem. I used to fall asleep a little too during Dharma teachings. Some people actually outright snore. They'd be like, shh, wake up. Oh yeah, no problem at all. No problem. And all types of wonderful things when we do Dharma. All types of wonderful things. And Kendo Rohi comes to Dharma talk in loose baggy clothes. That fit. Can you imagine? They actually require drawstrings. Because what Kendo Rohi does is when Kendo Rohi puts on the pants, right, has to lay flat on the ground and zip it up. But unfortunately, it doesn't stay up. Every time Kendo Rohi walks away, we can see busts behind, cleavage. And Paris had enough. She wrote a nasty note, can you get clothes that fit? She just had enough. Do you know why she had enough? It's because he's challenging her. Only she's allowed to wear clothes that reveal and open and show cleavage everywhere. Only she's allowed. You see Paris, when she comes to Dharma TV, she stuffs tissues down here, you know, to make it more bouncy and whatever. Tissues. Incredible. So you see, and then one day, Kendo Rohi goes all the way to Paris shopping for clothes. Can you imagine? They come back, they look exactly the same. Oh my God. Kendo Rohi wears those glasses and gels up his hair. They're both curly what? And they both got, 3 months pregnant. Okay. And, you know, tight clothes, and they walk, and they walk here and there. Oh my, and then all Paris, all Kendo Rohi has to do is scream a little louder. That's it. And then it's Paris. Isn't that fabulous? And we'll call Kendo Rohi Delhi. Delhi and Paris. Isn't that fabulous? All these things can happen. Wonderful things. Wonderful, wonderful things. And Wendy, you know what we can do with her? We're going to open up a Dharma center in Jalan Alor to help everyone. So we'll stick Wendy there. But she'll take the night shift. 1 a.m. to 7 a.m. while the thugs and the druggies and the weirdos and Jivan is there. Can you imagine? And then, of course, we'll put Big Andy in the morning shift because, you know, it's more dangerous what? So you see Wendy every day going to the center? It'd be so funny as she'd be in front doing Dharma for Tibetan. Mom, protect me. Please remove my post. Wonderful, wonderful. All right, any questions about what I talked about? Because I'm kind of done.
Hello. Oh, okay. It's not so much a question. Could you just tell us a bit about Higher Griva, Sangdoma, and Genzei for the chakra write-ups?
Okay.
Thank you.
Higher Griva, Sangdoma, and Genzei. That's pretty easy. All these three chakras can be used for the same purpose, exact same purpose. The difference is that Higher Griva and Sangdoma can be used both as a Yidam and a Dharma protector. Higher Griva has three faces, 6 arms and 8 legs, red, ferocious in color, with 3 neighing horse heads on top. Very ferocious. That is, Higher Griva is the form that Guru Rinpoche used and accomplished in a retreat before he came to Tibet in order to subdue the very powerful spirits. Very powerful. The oracle of Tibet, Nechung, was subdued by Higher Griva practice. So Higher Griva is a direct emanation of Amitabha Buddha. And it's very powerful in purifying. Higher Griva practice is very powerful in protecting you from obstacles, diseases, interruptions, and problems that arise specifically from Naga spirits or snake spirits. Any type of spirits associated with the water or Naga beings that you've offended, you know, you on the way home, you pee-peed on some tree and there was a Naga there you peed on, and guess what? Next day you got skin problems and you get bad dreams of snakes and all that. Higher Griva is very, very powerful for counteracting any kind of problems that arise from snake spirits, snakes. And his practice is very, very powerful for subjugating very ferocious places, ferocious, dangerous places, places that the environment is dangerous, haunted, scary, bad energy. He's very powerful for subduing that. But on an inner level, he is very powerful if we do his sadhana and practice for destroying anger. Very powerful, absorbing and destroying anger. We finish Higher Griva practice, we're all right. And for obstructions to life. You know, if we have some obstacles of life that, you know, very dangerous where we can die, if we do Higher Griva practice, it will stop it. Why? Life is precious. Once it's gone, it's gone. That's it. So Higher Griva practice is very powerful in stopping obstacles to life, life-threatening situations, life-threatening diseases. Cancer, diseases such as cancer and stuff are believed to be caused by Nagas or related to Nagas. And cancer diseases are very much helped by Higher Griva practice. Very, very powerful, this mantra. This one can do without initiation. Has a sadhana and a practice also. So when we do Higher Griva's practice, it's very, very powerful for purifying and protecting us from snake spirits, nagas, which is very common, and sudden diseases, fits, epileptic fits that are caused by spirits, not natural causes. And also very, very powerful, subjugating the environment, subjugating the place, subjugating the area. Very, very powerful. And also in controlling deities. Deities not in light nature, worldly deities. Higher Griva is very powerful for controlling them. So an accomplished Higher Griva Siddha, or one who meditates on Higher Griva and practices it, they'll be very powerful in controlling spirits, subduing them and ordering them to do what they want. I mean, of course, good things, stopping them and doing negative things. So wearing a Higher Griva chakra has that kind of effect. Very, very powerful, very nice. And Higher Griva is a direct emanation of Amitabha Buddha. Okay? Then Sing Dong Ma, one face, the face of a lion, a snow lion, with three eyes gaping and mouth open, with tongues rolling, very fierce, and the hair all standing up, very violent, filled with violence, screaming and shaking, this lady, jumping. The energy is fantastic. It's this lady with a lion head, with two arms holding a cleaver, skull cut, dancing on a corpse, blue in color, with her breasts hanging, naked, showing her secret organ. She doesn't care anymore. No more conventions. And she wears animal skins. She's assisted by the boar-headed Dakini and the tiger-headed Dakini. Incredible. And then her body is magnificent. She's jumping and screaming. She holds a katanga. She's jumping and she's screaming and she's wild. Her mouth is wide open and her energy is vibrating and moving. And she's totally in action. And the movement is so fast that it's vibrating. And it moves, and her hair is swaying, and her hair is moving back and forth, and she's looking into the 10 directions. And anybody who invokes upon this great Dakini, Simha Mukha, or by the power of her prayers, immediate obstacles will be arrested. Immediate problems will be arrested. If you do her as your personal Yidam, it's a very, very powerful practice for protection against weapons, protection against projectiles, against magic, specifically magic that are sent to you for you. Not just you walk near an area and something follows you home, specifically to you. And her practice is very, very powerful and very quick for accomplishing. Obstacles that arise when you want to do Dharma practice. In the great monasteries such as Gandin Monastery, every single day the monks will debate. Before debate, they will do an invocation to the goddess Sing Dong Ma, and they recite her mantra and clap. After they recite her mantra and clap, obstacles dispel. For doing immediate Dharma practice, she is excellent, excellent for dispelling obstacles for Dharma. And one who wants to exercise spirits, exercise beings, and you have no choice. Simha Mukha or Sing Dong Ma is very powerful for that. Her female lion's head represents that she is queen of the samsaric jungle. Her body is naked, meaning no conventions can chain her down and hold her down anymore. She shows you her secret organ openly and just without care. No care. She's totally rude. Why? She's showing that it's not you, she is rude. It is you who have conventions, projections, who view her as rude, but she is free. Her body is blue, representative of her Dharmakaya nature, which she has achieved emptiness. Dharmakaya nature is achieving emptiness fully. She is not a worldly deity. She is not a worldly lady. She is fully enlightened. And her mouth is gaping and open, ready to swallow, to absorb, to take your sufferings and problems. Dancing on a corpse. And her body is filled with fire. Violent, virulent, not smoke, not wind, pure fire. Unlike Benin Lamo, who is Oreo, is burned obstacles, so it's smoke and wind, so you see dark. Around Benin Lamo, you don't see much fire, you see darkness. Why? In her, it's considered the obstacles are burned, so there's just smoke. But in Sing Dong Ma, she completely is on fire, surrounded. It's incredible, Sing Dong Ma's practice. Very effective. So when we do her chakra, when we wear her chakra, has all the benefits of any Buddha, but violent, quick, fast energy. Example here. And her prayer is very short. Those who are fortunate enough to engage in it, even without initiation, you may engage in this, although it's very, very, very powerful. And it says here, glorious Adamantine goddess, wrathful female with a lion's face, whose fire of gnosis emanates light rays, lion-faced goddess, I bow down to you. Akasamaraza Shandaraza Maraya Pe. Lion-faced Dakini, because of the force and the power of the recitation of your mantra, let enemies who torment us teachers, pupils, and attendants hindering spirits who harm us, obstructive conditions, and in short, every enduring inauspiciousness be turned back. Hosts of blazing, wrathful females. She doesn't have any male entourage. She doesn't like men. She eats them. She wears a t-shirt. Men are my pets. Hosts of blazing, wrathful females. Smash into dust motes the body and speech of all the nature of hindering foes and release their consciousness into Dharmadhatu. She is so violent that when it's necessary, she will kill you. She will kill you and instantly she will project your mind into Dharmadhatu. Means what? A pure land. So when you do something so bad that if you continue, you're going to go to one of the lower realms. Out of her great compassion, she will annihilate you. Annihilate you into bliss. She's very virulent, very violent. And through the recitation of your mantra, let me quell all injury, achieve my aims just as I wish, and spread the doctrine and teachings and practice. She's specifically excellent to do in Dharma institutions, Dharma centers, Dharma projects, to cut obstacles for Dharma. All right? Now, the last one, Genze. Give it example. When, for whatever reason, the Yidam's practices cannot work for you effectively due to your lack of merits, when rituals and invocations does not work very well and effective for you and quickly because of your lack of merits or your broken samaya, and when the obstacles are totally overwhelming and you have nowhere to turn, you have nowhere to go, and you are born in a time where the age is very degenerate, especially during the Kali Yuga age, this time, maybe not 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, now, then Genze's chakra will be most effective. Genze is manifested specifically for the Kali Yuga time, the time where beings are violent, barbaric, will not listen, rude, very easily distracted, will not hold samaya, lazy to do practice, during the most horrible times of the Kali Yuga, such as now, when even doing even one mantra is so difficult for us. Genze is a very powerful way to destroy those obstacles, to ford a way when there's no ford. And for those seeking wealth, it is one of the most efficacious and quickest ways to achieve wealth. For when methods to dispel obstacles and black magic is one of the most effective, most effective. For controlling the weather, for controlling the environment, for stopping natural disasters, and physical and unseen foes, enemies that want to kill you, very, very powerful to protect. Very, very powerful. So one who has the Genze chakra, the way to invoke the energy is to recite the Guru Yoga Lama Tsongkhapa and recite Miktsama. Either Miktsama or the short mantra Lama Tsongkhapa or the prayer write-up we have in Tsongkhapa. Any practices you do to Tsongkhapa and any of his mantras, Omarabhasanadi, Omagurubhasumatikiti, Samudrasiddhi Hong Hong, or Mimetevetetanchenesi, it doesn't matter. Whatever mantra you do relates to Lama Tsongkhapa, this will activate the energy of that. And this chakra and this practice and this energy is very powerful for times when times are very rough, difficult, extremely degenerated. It's very powerful for that. Very, very powerful. And for factories, for business, for people who want to achieve some kind of material wealth, very, very effective. Very, very effective. I can almost say, you have to excuse me for this, quicker than Zambala. I can say that. Why? Because Zambala is a Yidam. It requires more practice, more meditative skills, higher motivation. Genze doesn't require so much. Very quick and very fast. Very, very fast. So Genze chakras are excellent for those engaging in new business, new enterprise, for protection against things you cannot even recognize what they are, but they're obstructors. You see things, you hear things, you're scared. They're very, very powerful. Excellent for people of the degenerate age whose minds are degenerate. Meaning, if you're a highly realized being living in degenerate age, it's different. But if you are not a highly realized being, you're a degenerate being living in degenerate age, Genze is very powerful. Very, very powerful for everything you need to accomplish. It's an all-around vitamin, multivitamin, multi. And so, again, to invoke upon Genzei's powers, one recites any prayer to Lama Tsongkhapa, any mantra to Lama Tsongkhapa, and take refuge in Lama Tsongkhapa. If you take refuge in Lama Tsongkhapa, you think about Lama Tsongkhapa, Genzei's activities will grow very fast, will generate. Excellent, these chakras are given to our friends, put in cars, we put in purses, anything. They're light, they're easy, they're not expensive, and they're made by very qualified lamas. Blessed. They're blessed and made by my own gurus, my own personal gurus. I don't buy chakras from here, I don't make chakras here and there, no. If I'm going to distribute chakras in this great city, it's going to be the real thing. It's going to have the real effect. And the chakras should not be made wet, not that they lose power, it's paper, so it's going to melt. So you try to get them encased or protect them. You can even put them in your wallet. Some people say, I sit on it. You don't mean to sit on it. Men don't carry purses. And some men don't want to carry, you know, big chunky things here. You can keep in your wallet without it. It's okay. And if it gets ripped or damaged, then you visualize it dissolving into light, into the letter Ah. And the Ah dissolves into you. You bless it, and it's without anything, and you can burn it politely, respectfully. You can get a new one. It's not a problem. No problem at all. Even if you're disrespectful, no negative karma. It's not a fool. It's a chakra, and a chakra is the invocation of the energy of that particular Buddha. The body, the speech, and mind energy of that Buddha. So it's made in such a way that the mandala, the letters, the placement, the mantras that's on it specifically invokes the body, speech, mind, wisdom, and activity of that particular Buddha. And then if we just wear it, it's quite effective because it has power. But if we invoke upon it, it's even better. So if we have a particular chakra, we recite the mantra, that's okay. And people, you look at them, they don't want to recite them. Never mind, don't need to disturb them. No need to disturb. Very, very powerful, very effective. Okay, questions on that? No questions? Is Paul wearing a sign on his back of his shirt saying, don't ask anything? Right on the back, you know? No, right? Okay, good. It's been a great session. We finished everything, didn't we? Is that all right with you? Everything's done, right? Good. Henry's looking at me innocently. Not many things, but we figured it out. 6 weeks later, we finished. See? Where there's no Dharma, let it be the Dharma. Where there's a misunderstanding of Dharma, may we clear it. And when Dharma has not grown, may we make it grow. May we take on personal responsibility to burden and to shoulder the difficulties that our body and our speech and our mind has to endure for the sake of bringing happiness to others. May we never run away from burdens and difficulties, mental and physical, that we may be able to shoulder and take on the burdens, that others may be happy. And others may receive happiness, and others will always abide in happiness. When we come across a difficult road, may we always choose the more difficult path and not the simple path. In this life and all future lives, may we never be separated from a perfect Buddha, a perfect master, a perfect lineage, and always please the Buddhas by practicing. May we not look at others with disdain or scorn or judgmental attitudes, but as beings caught in the intricate web and quicksand of samsara, and that not knowing what they do, they create suffering again for themselves and others, and that out of knowing this, we generate increasing compassion, and never give up, and never be distraught, and never be disappointed by their actions. Never be disappointed by their speech, never be disappointed by their attitudes. That in response to their harm, we may perfect the patience, the practice of patience, by patiently, again and again, reminding them and teaching them the Dharma. May we rise above all conventions of good and bad, and abide in equanimity, not good and not bad, but equanimity. May our lives be used not for eating and sleeping and for entertainment, but our precious lives be used that it fulfills others and our own purposes on an ultimate level. May His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and all the great masters of all lineages, in all traditions, on all religions, always be surrounded by a perfect entourage, eager students, and great patrons and great sponsors. May the Dharma works grow. May their institutions and their plans fruition and grow very big for the benefit of others. And may they live like an immortal and not pass away into nirvana. Janju. Tony. Gewan. 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 Chijijabo. Gangri Dewe. Good. Wonderful.